Cambridge United's last league victory at Shrewsbury came in April 1991. Up front that night was John Shaggy Taylor, but in 2024, it's the time for a new hero called Taylor. Hello, and a very warm welcome to Under the Abbey Stand. I'm Jordan Warland, and I'm delighted to be sat here, not about to discuss a 0-0 draw, as I'm sure Tom is in the same boat. Instead, we're going to talk about our first away win in 6 months. Joining me, I have a very excited-looking panel to do just that. The first of which, I'm going to ask him to remind me what year he was born, because I'm pretty sure wasn't around in April 91. Good afternoon, Julian.
Hello, mate. I was actually born even earlier than Tom as well, so he's the one you he's the one you want. But no,
I knew Tom definitely wasn't that baby face, that cute little baby face. You, I couldn't remember though.
I was June 96, so I was a long time after our last win at Shrews. But great to be here, mate.
League win, because we can't do the misjustice of Joe Piggott scoring a winner in like the league trophy game, which I'm sure Tom remembers. But yeah, your whole lifetime, Julian, we've not won a league game at Shrewsbury.
I know. And yesterday's finally the blessed moment that I've been waiting my whole life for, a winner, win down at Shrewsbury.
I have to ask you, I've got down in my notes, I have to ask Julian about the correlation of no one from UTAS being at the game and the fact that we've won. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, there's got to be something in it. Although the last league win, there was quite a few of us at Fleetwood. Well, at least me and Tom were up at Fleetwood. But what I was going to say, apart from that, was also just the fact that it's hilarious that that's our second away win of the season. And because it was Fleetwood and Shrewsbury away, there's a strong chance that a lot of people haven't seen us win away for a long time like this. These aren't exactly like, you know, big games that we're managing to win, if you see what I mean, in terms of supporters and like the following there. So, yeah, a lot of people won't have actually witnessed us win away from home for a long time, but it's 3 points anyway, isn't it?
Lovely 3 points. Tom, second goal went in yesterday. I was naturally very, very excited watching it on my TV screen, and I saw Taylor and the team celebrating in front of the fans, and I couldn't help but notice there was a few people what appeared to be rushing from underneath the stand to join in the celebrations. Now, you didn't go on Saturday, you watched it with Julian, which must have been a real treat for you anyway. But if you were there, what odds do you reckon would have been that you would have missed that second goal?
Funny story about that, actually. We were obviously watching on iFollow, courtesy of the Hamburg news, I assume.
Great group to be part of, mate.
Yeah. Now, thankfully, well, I guess the curse and also in this case, the benefit of watching it on iFollow is that often there is a bit of a delay with what's happened in the game. I was not present when the second half kicked off. And thankfully, because there was a delay, I actually saw the goal. But if it wasn't for that, I'd have missed it. So, look, my thoughts with everyone, you know, you can see in the highlights sort of rushing out the tunnel to come and see it. Look, we've all been there. I would argue that a winning goal at Shrewsbury is not a winning goal at Newcastle in terms of the magnitude of what it means to everybody. So I'm still sort of winning in a way.
That's a mad way to win, isn't it?
The title that no one wants to win. Yeah, well done.
Yeah, I've had to do some pretty incredible mental gymnastics to get to that point. But yeah, look, 46 minute goal shouldn't happen. 45th minute goal shouldn't happen. I would argue that the first 5 minutes of games, from probably about the 38th until half time, and probably from 45 until about 51, just there should just be like a mutual agreement that nothing really happens, because
just play it around. Just play it around the back.
To be doing. Yeah, absolutely. And you know, I do always say it when we're strolling up to the Abbey, you know, for home games and walking into away grounds, inevitably a few minutes late. Nothing ever happens early on in games, so don't worry about it. I'm not worried. Why should you be?
But I love the idea of like the absolute legends who are like finish halfway through their pints and then like,
I'm not rushing it. Not rushing it. Nah.
Yeah. Yeah. Just to go back to the point you made at the start, Jordan. Obviously, the first time I've won since '91 at Shrewsbury. I believe
in the league.
In the league, yeah. Of course, we can't, lest we forget the Papa John's, Bristol Street Motors, Carling Cup, whatever it is. I believe we might have won the third division that season, George. So are you saying it's on?
He's right.
Absolutely, mate. Absolutely. We did win the third division that year. There'll be people listening to this pod that will be talking about the run-in. So when we beat Shrewsbury, it was on a Thursday night, and it was in
April. The lesser seen Thursday night, that's class.
Well, it was in April, and I think we had a whole load of games to catch up on. So we went sort of like Saturday, Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday. I think we played something ridiculous, like 11 games in a very short space of time, and managed to sort of win quite a lot of them. I think it's on the message board, actually.
Imagine our pod schedule if we were playing that many games. I mean, it's a nightmare enough when you're doing Saturday, Tuesday, Saturday, Tuesday. We'd have to add in like extra preview shows. It'd be a fucking nightmare.
First world problems, isn't it?
Lads, would you like a question to start the pod? This one This one has come from Martin. It's a good one.
Thanks, Tom,
you might have some good answers for this. We're going to talk about Lyle Taylor quite a bit in this pod, I suspect, for obvious reasons. Martin wants to know, who is the best mid-season signing that we've seen? Because obviously Lyle Taylor, 3 goals in his first 4 games, is putting his name in the hat for that one. Now, I've got a suggestion that I'd like to go, that I'll throw out there if you two need a little second to think about an answer. Do you want me to
start? Yeah, you answer it for us, mate. That's fine. Don't worry about us.
Much easier.
I let my pal Owen down when I did Football Jenga against Neil Harris. So I'm going to make it up to Owen with my answer here. But I'm going to March 2000 and the loan signing of one Lionel Perez as best mid-season signing, because that was pretty exciting. That's pretty great. Went on to be a cult hero, which maybe Lyle Taylor might also do.
That's a great shout. I was my initial thought was straight back to last season, to be honest. I thought some of those, like Conor McGrandles being one potentially.
I thought you were going to say Jordan Jones again. I really did. You're just going to throw that answer at everything.
But the other, it's my answer for everything.
Scored at Borough on Saturday, so.
Yeah.
Who's laughing?
Agent Jones. The other one I've got is Lee McEverley. I know he's probably not,
Oh yeah, great shout.
Potentially, you know, maybe the wider sense didn't have like an enormous impact, but obviously a bit of a cult hero for that night at Burton. So yeah, I think that was a January signing. So there's one.
I will take your Lee McEverley and I will raise you Scott Rendell.
Nice, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Because I'm in mid-season.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, did the dirty.
Mid-season re-signing, yeah.
Yeah.
Came back, repaid us, scored loads of goals, won us the title, got us out of non-league, and we didn't spend much time there. That's what happened, so that's good.
That's the way it went. Yeah. Did
great answers, lads. Well done.
Yeah.
Anyone else got any? Tweet them in at @AbbeyStanPod. Love to know other people's thoughts. Sorry,
I thought Sam Smith was a good mid-season signing when he rediscovered himself in April last year.
When he started shushing the opposition instead of his own supporters. Yeah, that sort of time of year.
What a time to be alive that was, by the way.
Right, let's talk about Saturday's game then. Got a couple of general questions and then some questions about the match action itself. Tom, starting with you, if my memory is serving me correctly, I think the last time we came from behind to win away was at Morecambe.
Was Shrewsbury in 1991.
1991, yeah. Yeah. Which was what, 2 seasons ago? Been a bit of a while. How impressive was it to see us come from behind, pick up 3 points on the road?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's multiple things that you can look at and be really impressed with. And obviously, I think the biggest one is the fact that we've come from behind. I think, we obviously spoke to the Shrewsbury fan in preview of the game, and the one thing that he mentioned more than anything that was a real feel good factor around the club, and you know, obviously Paul Hurst gone back, he's won their first game, you know, for them a tricky game at Northampton that they've won, you know, seemingly fairly comfortably, and when you go 1-0 down sort of early-ish on, was it like sort of 10-11 minutes on the clock, the ground presumably is up and really buzzing. And I think that's a sort of situation where, you know, in months and seasons gone by, we would simply have just folded, like Shrewsbury last season, for example. And I think in many ways, that's the biggest sort of positive that you can take from it, is that there does seem to be a genuine shift in kind of mentality. Now, that might be the manager, it might be from some of the players and characters that we brought into the club, like Lyle Taylor, for example. That have just raised standards a little bit and just, you know, given us a bit of an extra edge in these games. And that's kind of what we've been looking for, just to push us on a little bit. You know, last season was obviously a bit hairy at times and not comfortable come the end of the season. And to be able to do that away at Shrewsbury and just not let, you know, one goal kind of get on top of you, not let one become two, become three, become four, like we've done and been guilty of on certain occasions. And obviously there wasn't loads of time to kind of steady yourself, because obviously pretty much as soon as we've picked the ball out of our own net, it's in Shrewsbury's, and that's obviously a real, real positive. I guess part of me wonders that had we not got that equaliser so quickly, would the game maybe have just got away from us a little bit? It's obviously, thankfully, not something we have to think too much about. But yeah, it's a really impressive thing. You know, I think, and the conversation that you guys had on the preview show was that it's probably not a great time to be playing Shrewsbury because of all the things that I've just mentioned there.
Mm-hmm.
And to be able to kind of get pegged back and then, you know, flip it round in our favour is really it is impressive, and it, you know, there's still a long way to go. There's a lot of football to be played. You know, things can happen between now and the end of the season, of course, but it's the sort of result, it's the sort of performance, it's the sort of manner of getting a result that does give you a bit of confidence. Actually, we should be okay here. I think, you know, if you look at the sort of points per game that we're going to need to get to the sort of 50 mark now, it's well in our favour, and realistically something would probably have to go wrong not to hit at least 50 points. Now, we don't know how the table's going to look coming into the season, what the exact total is going to be, but yeah, it's a really big thing, and you know, obviously to win away from home is, it feels like a bit of a bonus in a way. I don't want to say that Shrewsbury away is a free hit, because obviously it's not, but like, when you kind of look at the fixtures in February and you top up where you think points are going to come from, I would argue that not many people would have had us down for a win at Shrewsbury. And what it does is, it does take a bit of pressure off getting 3 points in a Bolton game, I think. And look, I mean, if we can take four from the next two, that puts us in a great spot.
Well, we're unbeaten in the last four, and in that sort of mini run of what, Exeter, Burton and Shrewsbury, you know, 5 points from that, that's massive in the sort of relegation staying up picture, right?
Yeah, I mean, look,
taking points from us as well, right? Which is, or like big points from us, managing not to lose those games is huge in the grand scheme of things.
You know what happens as well as I do here, though? We go unbeaten, what would that be? 9 games leading up to the Posh game?
Stop it. or they start their rut starting on Saturday with a home defeat at Wigan. They start their rut. They don't win for like 8. Abbey.
I can already predict the exact chat we're going to be having on the preview show before Posh is going to be something along the lines of, "God, we're up, we're flying. There, it's a really good time to play them." And then the review show is going to be somewhat more somber, I think. But yeah, remains to be seen. But no, really good stuff. And the only thing that disappoints me a little bit is I wasn't there to see the fist pumps in the flesh, because they are excellent.
Some good photos of them, though. Good photos. Yeah. Good. The photography team seem to have cottoned on.
It's just, it's the technique on them, Jord. It's the technique on them. It's like a golf swing when you see him. Like,
well, the other thing as well, mate, like, he can do it anywhere. Like, you know, the recording studio in the Portland is tiny, and the fist pumps when he won that football Jenga, like, with precision, without like hitting anyone in the face. Julian, let's take a moment for Mr. Lyle Taylor. A lot to say about his performance on Saturday. Let's start though off the pitch, because we've had a question from Matt, which I think is a bit of you. You're a kind of guy that likes to sort of read a player from their post-match or pre-match interviews, and you work in the media, and that this is your vibe. Matt wants to know, is Lyle Taylor the best player we've had talking to the media? And then he goes on to say, watching his sound bites motivates me as a fan. First thing this morning after watching the Lyle Taylor interview, because that's how I spend my mornings when I wake up, I texted our group saying, this guy needs to be captain. That's how motivated I was, Matt. Yeah. So I'm fully on board.
I think he's brilliant, isn't he? Like, he's so, like, there's something so sort of like almost captivating, like quite endearing about the way he speaks to camera. You're right. Like, I'm struggling to think of anyone, any player we've had who's quite so like, yeah, motivational, or just like, you just want to watch his interviews. I think player interviews.
Boateng was really good at talking to the media.
Yeah.
One specific moment.
But mainly with player interviews, I think much more so than managers. They're quite like, they can be quite sort of, I don't know, cliche.
Boring. I think it's
boring. Yeah, fine. Let's go as far as boring. Yeah.
A bit stupid. Yeah.
And it's completely fair enough. I think they get, stupid might be harsh, Jordan. I think they get media trained.
I'm a failed footballer. That's why I'm saying mean things.
Yeah. And I think more than anything, they just, you know, there's no need for them to say anything that isn't just the cliche or what, you know, the sort of pre-written PR lines that they might get told to say in their interviews. And right, why sort of bring that attention on yourself? But Lyle Taylor just seems like a different sort of character entirely. And he's like, he's sort of, we were just saying just before we recorded, there's something about his mannerisms. He does like verge on Brent sometimes. He's just got this little sort of like, it's really hard to describe, but he's got that little sort of like, yeah, I don't know, those like mannerisms that are, I don't know, it's great, but he's wicked. And something he said yesterday, which I thought was really, really interesting, was that he mentioned in the week that he'd like spoke to the manager and was just like, I'm loving life here. Like, I'm just loving this. And I wonder if there's something in having the, he mentioned in his, one of his early interviews, maybe it was a signing interview, that he is obviously one of the, suddenly he's one of the senior members of the squad, and sort of like the dynamics shifted in terms of what he is. And I wonder if he's actually really like enjoying that and grabbing hold of it with both hands. Cause you can tell he's quite a big character in the dressing room. And I wonder if that's really, really, that really suits him actually, that he mentions he was talking to Salim Akambi about like his time out and stuff and like how to get through those periods, and actually like being a bit of a sort of maybe a role model or like that more senior member of the dressing room is something that actually really suits him. And that's
what that was great in his interview as well, right?
Yeah,
because that's sort of really showing his character and his personality, yeah, and
his leadership and
yeah, and it sort of contradicts everything that was sort of portrayed exactly about him when he signed, you know, about how he's, you know, can be a bad egg, he can be disruptive in the dressing room, he can be a snake, and all those things that, you know, everyone sort of said when he joined. It's the complete opposite. And I wonder if it's something to do with, I know obviously he had a couple of months at Wickham, but the year and a half before that when he was out of football, and that whole, you know, that whole cliche about not knowing what you've got until it's gone, maybe it's sort of a second chance and he's really relishing it. And or maybe it's just the, you know, just the environment that he's in, you know, he's surrounded by
right
people,
moment, yeah.
people that he knows, he's worked with before. Obviously, we just signed On as well, who he used to play with. So maybe it's just
right place, right time.
Right, yeah. Or jolly, you know, always pals back together, getting the gang back together.
I was going to say, that's the most surprising thing about him, is like I've always had him down, even before he signed for us, like just the sort of discourse around him has always been like, he's a bit of a mercenary, like he might score you some goals, but he's maybe not like a team player like some other players are, or that's at least the sort of narrative that I got from other fans, especially Charlton fans, obviously, and you can probably understand why.
By the way, how great is that Charlton at home fixture now starting to look like, all the people that we've now got, the fact that they are what they're on the slide, I'm sure they'll bounce before we play them, but as it stands they're in the bottom six.
It's suddenly spicy, isn't it? But yeah, like you, with Taylor, I mean, you can just see that I think that responsibility and that sort of leadership quality is actually the opposite of what I was expecting in the most positive way. I can imagine, I think he's probably had a huge impact on the side, and you know, aside from scoring 3 and 4, it's probably no coincidence to me that this unbeaten run coincides with the period since Taylor signed.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Well, I was going to ask Tom your thoughts on that, because obviously, yeah, like Julian says, it's 3 goals in 4 games now. But do you think, you know, Taylor is the difference? You know, this is the reason why we're sort of picking up these wins or picking up these results. Or do you think it's a much bigger thing at play here, which is probably more to do with the new management?
I think naturally it's obviously going to be a bit of everything, right? But and look, we obviously don't see training, so we don't see exactly what it looks like, you know sort of on the grass, if you like, but what I will say is that, you know, I've noticed obviously some of the content they're putting out, like when Bond signed, you know, they did all the sort of behind the scenes stuff there, and obviously Taylor's sort of in these things like quite heavily, you know, in different bits of content the club put out. So what I see from that is just like what a presence he is and what a character he's sort of brought into the club. I don't know what the dynamic was like before that, but it feels like he's really made a bit of an impact. And the impression I get is that probably it's raised standards a little bit, I think, bringing someone in who's probably just not afraid to like tell people when they need to pull their socks up a little bit. And that might be where, you know, the kind of reputation maybe comes from a little bit, because he's an outspoken guy, right? He's not afraid to speak his mind. He's not afraid to say, you know, say what he thinks.
We've all seen the tweets.
Yeah. Yes, I've hit the odd copper. but yeah, like, you know, you can imagine it's a bit Wes-esque, you know, in the way that, you know, we heard so many times from people within the club and the players we've chatted to on the pod and stuff that, you know, back in the promotion year and the first season in League One, obviously Wes rocked up on a sort of Thursday or Friday to do training and everyone was at it the second he walked in the door. I don't know if it'd be as stark as that because obviously he's training every day and it, you know, it's hard to maintain such a high level. But I imagine that, you know, when you're bringing in players like Taylor and Bond, like it can only have a good impact sort of around the group. So that's maybe like a wider point of maybe what it's done to sort of drag everyone else up with him. But I mean, his impact has been brilliant, you know, on the pitch. We spoke obviously after the Fleetwood game and we're talking about like the best debuts that we've seen, and his is obviously right up there. And, you know, Exeter maybe wasn't quite his day in a performance, which was obviously all focused on the other end of the pitch. And, you know, he sort of huffed and puffed a lot against Burton. Maybe did a lot of the sort of doggy work that other people should have been doing for him. And then on the Saturday against Shrewsbury, it's Lyle Taylor doing Lyle Taylor things, I guess. He's in the right place at the right time on two occasions. It wins you the game. We didn't create like a whole host of chances. You know, we weren't super creative, I don't think. But when you've got someone on the pitch who, you know, it just simply has a knack of being in the right place and can score goals, you don't necessarily need to do loads of that. So, you know, his impact has been brilliant. You know, the obvious thing is the goals and the results that have come since. But I do think there's probably something a little bit deeper there that maybe he's just kind of dragging other people up with him, and that can only be a good thing.
I do also think, sorry, can I just add a tiny little point to that? Tom mentioned just before about the sort of difference in mentality I think you can see with the squad that I think is definitely a natural fact of someone like Harris coming in, especially away from home. We've got that different, a sort of a grit about us that I know it's a bit of an intangible, but I do think it's there for everyone to see. You look at the amount of times we've come back in these games to pick up points at Charlton and yesterday, and obviously Blackpool at home, but talking specifically about away games, I think that mentality, I think Taylor very much helps on the pitch, like leading from the front in that respect. So I think Tom's bang on there, and that is a big part of this sort of upturn.
I was going to ask you this later in the pod, Julian, but I might as well say it now. Like, second half, when we were ahead, I know Shrewsbury had a lot of the ball, a lot of possession, but it did feel fairly comfortable. It felt like we contained them pretty well. At no point was I sort of thinking, you know, we're going to collapse here, we're going to go behind. And, you know, like Tom mentioned a little bit earlier, like under previous regimes, you definitely would have thought that. You definitely thought we draw this game or we maybe even lose this game.
The only chance, I think, forgive me if I'm missing one, but I think the only real huge chance in that second half was from the corner, right? Which Steven saves from point blank range. I'm not entirely sure how it doesn't go in. Taylor mentioned it in his post-match how physical Shrewsbury are and how much of a test they were. It's similar to Burton in that respect.
They created virtually nothing. Like their XG is normal.
I was going to say.
So it's under half a goal.
Apart from that. We just seem
really comfortable in game. Like whether we're in the lead or we're behind or we're drawing, we just seem sort of...
I think something to be
pressured or forced.
For when we're in that position, like having Ryan Bennett and Michael Morrison, when the ball's been played in front of them, that's like the ideal situation for them to be in. I think when you saw us more exposed yesterday was in that first, probably in the first half an hour is where their goal comes from, when Shipley especially, who was getting a little bit of joy down their left-hand side, when they were sort of turning, you know, trying to turn the defence a little bit and you're playing slightly more exposed in that sense. But I think in the second half, what we did so well is like the ball being in front of us and them trying to break us down. That's Bennett and Morrison's bread and butter. So I think that's a huge part.
Huge part of it, really. It's going to be a really like positive pod, so I feel bad for bringing the vibe down slightly. But I guess the one sort of negative from Saturday was conceding fairly early. Were you disappointed with the goal, Julian? Like, do you think we could have done better? Do you think it sort of exposes a bit of a problem there? Like, both centre backs were essentially done for pace.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, I just think Bennett shouldn't let the ball get past him there on once he's squared him up. It is maybe a little bit of a pace thing, but I think he's done well enough to get tight to him, and then maybe not quite tight enough. Like the ball just shouldn't really get past him there, I don't think. It's not like he's done anything particularly crazy. He sort of just tapped the ball around him and put a low ball in. It seems pretty predictable what Shipley was trying to do. So yeah, a bit frustrating. It seemed simple. And you'd sort of expect someone of Bennett's quality to maybe do the basics there and just not let the ball get into the box. And there was a couple of times you saw that happen in that first half an hour. But to answer your previous question, like that's first half, I think. In the second half, I really don't think they were created much. As Tom said, the XG is there for all to see.
Tom, we've talked about conceding early. Let's pick ourselves up and talk about an almost instant response. So first question is, can you remember a time where we've done that? And I've got a little anecdote in my head about how we wanted to mention, well, was it the Fleetwood game where we almost did it and then it led to miss of the season and we kind of sort of glossed over it a little bit?
Yeah, there's the one that springs to mind, and I don't remember if this was right after, but first season back in the Football League, we played Northampton at home.
On a Friday night?
Friday night.
And they, it might even have been Ivan Tony actually scored for him. And then we literally went straight down the other end and scored. That's the only time I can remember. I can remember maybe at Sunderland as well.
It wasn't
an equaliser. I think it was to make it 2-1 or maybe 1-1. I can't remember. But yeah, like it doesn't happen that often. I mean, I love this goal. Like I know
it's a great goal.
It's how quick it was. It's how Lancaster's a player that, you know, we and I have criticised a lot this season for simply just not impacting games enough at times. But his role in this is just brilliant. Like when we talk about wanting to see a Jack Lancaster really take games and really impact games and stamp his mark, like this is the stuff. Like I know it's easy to say, like, why don't you just run half length of the pitch, put it on the plate for Lyle Taylor, but like it's just like the bravery is just like run forward and just try and put something in the box for someone to get on the end of. So really, really good from him. But what I particularly loved, and you know, that there's probably, like, from the outside looking in, and this is going back to Taylor again a little bit, but like when you sign a guy like Lyle Taylor, whose career, you know, has gone from Forest to Wickham to us, and you know, there might be the accusation leveled at him sometimes, this sort of profile of player that they just have like a payday, they're just here to, you know, kind of wind their career down. The desire from him to absolutely like shift into the 6-yard box is so good. And like, this is what you're going to need. Like, if we're going to be able to just pull ourselves a little bit clear, like it's this sort of stuff that we've just been lacking a little bit of. And, you know, obviously the finish ultimately looks really simple, but the work from Lancaster on the left-hand side and obviously for Taylor to get in that position, I think is brilliant.
I'm so glad you said the word simple, because that's what I was going to say. Like, I love goals that when you watch them, it just looks so effortless and so simple. Like that first goal and second goal look like, but yeah, it wasn't simple at all. Like the work rate, the ball into the box, you know, the intelligence of you know, how to sort of, you know, time your run in and get away from your defender, which Taylor did. Like all three bits of that goal were not simple at all, but in one swift motion, it just looks so plain and easy. It was, yeah, I really, really love that goal as well. What I also found really interesting, Tom, Neil Harris after the game basically saying that the first part of Lancaster's involvement with that goal is just something that we don't think of as a Jack Lancaster trait, like getting the ball, knocking it beyond someone and then doing them for pace. And it's such a good point. Like, I can't think of any time in his time here that I've seen him do it. Like, I'm sure he has, but that was, yeah, it just felt like a bit of revelation seeing that.
Yeah, well, I think naturally, because of the position he's been played in, like, we kind of associate him a bit more with, you know, I guess a sort of Wes style of creativity, you know, sort of trying to pick out a pass or find a little pocket of space and try and do something, rather than, you know, essentially just, like you say, get some chalk on your boots, get to the byline and stick the ball in the box. And it's good that he's got that. It's good that he's showing that. So I think it's a fair criticism that's been levelled at him that, you know, he's not consistently been able to impact games enough. But I think if you look since Harris took over, there have been a few examples really of where he has made an impact. You know, I think particularly of like he wins a penalty at Charlton, obviously the assist on Saturday at Shrewsbury, and sort of one or two other moments as well in there. And it's good to see, because and as well, like if you go back to the sort of deadline day, you know, the transfer window, Harris was obviously after a wide player. Mm-hmm. And someone to just add that creativity, and you know, naturally we've not been able to bring him in, which is a shame. But if others are stepping up, like, it's kind of, you know, who cares really?
Well, on the topic of wide players, obviously the main sort of headline pre-game once the lineups came out was the fact that Brophy was dropped, and you know, Kaikai started on the left, Lancaster gets his place on the right hand side. Julian, Neil Harris talked about this in the
first
afterwards.
Name terms now, is it?
Sorry, my mate Neil. Interview. My mate Neil.
Chopper. Chop's how you doing, mate?
Go on, Chop. talked about sort of Brophy's confidence levels. Do you think this was something that sort of was in, you know, was due to happen? You know, Brophy getting a bit of a sort of a break from the starting lineup.
It strikes me a little bit that I don't think Harris will have a lot of time for wingers who don't actually deliver a lot of assists or goals.
Well,
right?
He said that midweek, right? In yeah. nicer terms, you know, his expectation is returns from those playing in wide positions, and Lancaster getting one isn't really going to help Brophy much.
Lancaster, exactly, scoring the sort of goal you don't expect of Lancaster, but you want Brophy to be doing loads more of, because you know he's got pace to burn, you know he could tap it around the defender and do him for pace and then just put a decent ball across. But it's always that end product. We've talked about him so many times, we're not going to go over all of that. Hopefully what it is it's a sign, you know, you see Lancaster do it, Brophy's not definitely not undroppable, obviously, under Harris, maybe as much as his place isn't quite as secure maybe as it was under Bonner, potentially. We know Brophy still adds a lot to this team. And if you can find that end product and that ability to contribute some goals and assists that, let's be honest, he really hasn't delivered enough of for the amount of appearances he's played, then he's obviously going to benefit everyone. And I actually thought he did quite well when he came on, to be honest. I thought he did everything he had to do pretty well, mm-hmm. especially defensively. Like, you can see that he's maybe slightly more reliable defensively, given he's played as a wing back a lot in his career. So I'm not trying to absolutely write him off and say that, right, Lancaster's, you know, the starting winger. But I do think that Harris is going to want to see a different side of James Brophy than what we've seen, which is that maybe more clinical edge in the final third than what he's been. I think everyone wants to see that, obviously. But yeah, like, interesting to see him dropped, really, because it's not something we're very used to, I think, especially under Bonner's teams.
Well, I guess the other thing as well, over the last few weeks with injuries, the thoughts of sort of dropping people just kind of wasn't on the cards, because you didn't have the options available, which we're now starting to see back in the squad. Julian, Tom and I waxed lyrical about the first goal. I quite enjoyed the second goal as well. Great little move from our boy Kachunga and a ball into the box. What was your, which one did you enjoy more, first or second?
Someone should really sponsor Kachunga.
Someone should sponsor him, yeah.
I think I enjoyed the first one more because of all the reasons you just said. And I will just repeat, we give Lancaster a lot of stick. That ball across is absolutely perfect. He does mm-hmm. so well for that goal. So it's worth heaping praise on him for that. So probably enjoyed the first, but the second's brilliant as well. I mean, we talked about how quick it came after half time. It's two things here. You know, Taylor has two touches in this move. The first one's that flick back to goal across to Kachunga, which is like, that's a mark of proper quality. And then to get himself in that position, Kachunga does so well to just get his head up and roll a ball across to him. If I was Shrewsbury, I would maybe consider not leaving Lyle Taylor completely unmarked around the penalty spot. But regardless, he tucked it home. He said in his interview that it was bobbling up to him and he still sort of ankled it. Like, he said it sort of like bobbled up to his ankle and he didn't quite go exactly where he'd intended it to. But they all count, don't they? But yeah, Kachunga did really, really well. And I think there's a different class about Kachunga. I love him playing in the hole there. He was winning loads of little bitty fouls in the first half and sort of breaking the game up maybe a little bit, and just with those neat little touches. And then here he is, like, delivering exactly when it matters. So brilliant. Great goal.
This one isn't in the running order, so sorry for springing it on you, Julian. But yeah, I agree. I like Kachunga in that 9.5 role. But now we've got Bon, and obviously we've got Taylor. What you do? Like, what's your preferred sort of lineup?
I'm convinced he's going to play five at the back at some point, or three at the back, whatever you want to call it. I mean, he'll do it at some point. I'm so sure of it. And it might be Tuesday. Me and Tom chatted about it and thought maybe today's, just before the lineups came out, today seems a bit too soon to be changing the formation. Maybe he won't change it now, considering how well we played overall on Saturday. I'm convinced at some point we'll see Bon and Taylor play up top. Yeah. The only way I can see that happening really is with a five, because I don't think, unless he goes to a straight 4-4-2, but then you drop Kachunga. I mean, these are great options to have, right?
Even when you're talking about some sort of 4-3-3 or a diamond, but then it doesn't involve the wingers, which we know is a big thing of Harris's
exactly. and
style.
I think if you do that, you do leave this one of Cousins or Digby probably potentially a little bit exposed, whereas with the five, obviously you've got the three centre-halves, maybe Gibbons in there with Bennett and Morrison, and then Cousins or Digby in front. You're still dropping one of Kachunga or Kaikai for all of that. And I think both of them have been playing absolutely too well to be dropped. It feels harsh. So I think Bon might be featuring off the bench. We've got so many games coming up that I can't imagine Taylor can play 90 in the seven games throughout February. So I think it's a case of rotation, probably in the same formation. But mark my words, at some point he'll play five at the back. We did have a look yesterday at some of his Gillingham sides, and he did do it a couple of times, according to my app, at some point at the start of this season in League Two. So it's not unheard of for Harris to do it.
Tom, for the record, this is Julian and you pushing the three at the back agenda here.
I'm not necessarily pushing it. Can I just say, I'm not saying it's my opinion. I just think he'll do it at some stage.
Yeah, I'm not pushing anything. Let's be very clear about that, Jord.
Jord, you haven't mentioned the Christmas tree yet. I've given you so many opportunities here to butt in with the Christmas tree.
Say the words, Jord. Say the words.
Do it, Jord.
Tom, the Shrewsbury fans were unhappy at the ref. give me your thoughts on that.
Yeah, look, I'm going to take this opportunity just to basically talk about the experience of watching it on iFollow, because it's not something that I have.
Because you don't normally see much. You don't get to hear the co-commentator. So commentators are fine. It's always the co.
Obviously, we were well acquainted with it during the COVID year, and particularly the Carlisle one is one that sticks in the mind. Half tempted to not go to Carlisle and just watch it on iFollow and hope he's still about. He'll still be slagging off Jack Iredale now. But I'll come on to the fans in a moment. But what I found hilarious is just like the co-commentator, like they're so like unapologetically just so biased. It's brilliant.
Yeah, it's amazing.
It's probably the same coming from me as well. Like, I didn't really think the ref did too much, to be honest. I didn't really think he did anything wrong. Like, I was a little bit whistle happy at the start. I sort of pulled things up a few times. Maybe could have played advantages here and there and didn't do it. Didn't really make any big decisions other than the red card. Which obviously comes right at the end of the game. I didn't really understand that at all. But the guy on co-coms was absolutely livid about it. Like, he kept going on about it. It's mental. Like, it's like, calm down, mate. It's not that bad. I also particularly enjoyed the regular updates of the Needham Market Telford game as well.
What was it at the start, Julian? You messaged saying, has anyone else got Scott's commentary?
It was mental. We flicked it on with about 10 minutes before the game. Honestly, someone back me up here.
They were talking about
clubs in like Lanarkshire.
And then anyway, back to the meadow.
Yeah.
Incredible scheduling, you've got to say.
There was a tackle in the second half, Brophy made. He lost the ball on the edge of the box and he sort of...
Yeah, he absolutely lost his mind, didn't he?
He lost it. It was a heavy challenge, but he won all of the ball and it wasn't particularly high from my memory. Like, I'd have to watch it back, but there's a reason that no one's talking about it now, I think. And yeah, he absolutely lost his mind at it. The red card seemed completely fair. Tripped someone over on the break for a second yellow.
Mm-hmm.
Look, I think Tom's right. There's a few 50-50s he maybe gave our way that were a little bit soft, but it's not enough to lose yourself a game, is it? It's a bit like us talking about the ref at Burton last week, like a bit frustrating a few here and there, but like not enough to have an impact on the game.
Right then, we briefly mentioned that things might be changed for Bolton's visit on Tuesday. Now seems like a good time to pause and get a Bolton fans perspective on the game.
All right, the news fans, delighted to be joined by Ben from Trotter Chatter. Thanks a lot for joining us, Ben. Bolton sitting third in League One at the moment. Looks like you're having quite a good season.
Yeah, I mean, can't really complain. It still feels like people are a bit annoyed. You know, there's still a few games everyone thinks we should have won, but at the same time, third with 3 games at hand on top, it's pretty hard to argue with.
What were the expectations pre-season? Was it playoffs, top end, automatics? Or
I think a lot of people had us down for automatics, like within Bolton's fan base. Like, I think we all did. I feel like me and Ryan both said we'd come top, so we've got to live up to some expectations ourselves. But no, I think everyone after last season, you know, we strengthened in the summer, and I think everyone was pretty confident that we'd be up towards the top end, but I still feel like we're sort of probably exceeding what people could have hoped for realistically.
Yeah, what's the last recent sort of run been like? Because I was just looking at the league table now and the form in the last day, you've formed team in the league. What's been clicking over January?
It's not been that different. Like, we've been, I mean, obviously being in third, we've been top of the form table a few times. Barnsley yesterday was tough. I think one of the things we started doing is we started to sort of not capitulate in these hard games. So like Barnsley yesterday, and then the game where we really let ourselves down was when Wigan did us 4-0 at home. They're the two teams that have really pressed us high up the pitch. Like we really like to play the ball out, work from the back. Barnsley yesterday were a real problem for us, sort of pressuring us down, having to hit it long way more than Everett would have liked, despite the fact the fans were a bit. You know, when you keep losing the ball 20 yards from your own goal, there's going to be some complaints. But it's more of the same, really. Like Carlisle last week, you know, we played him off the park, but, you know, Carlisle, we've had our running with Carlisle fans this season. We called them minnows and they didn't really like it. But yeah, I think it's just been more of the same, really. Like the only real thing is these games where we're not playing well, we're still managing to at least get a point out of them.
Right, I see. How does he normally have you set up then? Do you play five at the back, three at the back?
We do, yeah. Three centre backs with wing backs. We've, you know, weirdly over January we've lost almost all of them. We've just about had three centre backs to put together. But yeah, he likes to play three at the back, wing backs, three midfield, and two up top. Very, very possession based. Like yesterday, I think everyone would agree Barnsley were the better team. And we had 2/3 of the ball, so as I can't say I particularly know how Cambridge play, but if you do like to keep possession, you know they're the games we actually, you know, as fans tend to enjoy. Like as much as we can have 2/3 of the ball, we can be a bit prone at times to not doing anything with it.
It sounds like I was going to ask, you know, what's the way to break you down, but it sounds like you've answered that in terms of press high up the park. Who are the centre backs? Have you brought in some centre backs in January then to replace some?
We've brought in Caleb Taylor on loan from West Brom, who was at Cheltenham last season. They all rate him really highly. Our captain Ricardo Santos is out for a couple of weeks, so you know it's always going to help. No, to be honest, Taylor yesterday looked sound, although he did worryingly go off with a bit of a knock. So. We may end up playing a right back in centre back, and if we do, I think the way to break us down is target him.
Okay, yeah, I see. How's Jack Ardell getting on? Because I know he was a bit of a fan favourite when he was at Cambridge. So I think a few United fans would like to know what the sort of view's like, and is he getting game time? Is he playing well?
He's getting game time. I'm not necessarily going to say he's playing well. I think obviously with you, he was more of a fullback or wingback, wasn't he?
Yeah, he actually had to cover at centre-half because of injuries for a lot of the season. But yeah, naturally a fullback, definitely.
Yeah, with us, when we got him last season, he started playing more as a wing-back. But this season, he's had most of his game time at centre-back. And I think, sort of down to it, you know, there have been a few errors. But then I think also the high standard we've got at centre-back, when someone's not playing up to that standard, it really stands out. So I think there's a fair few fans that sort of wouldn't have him. So if everyone's fit, he wouldn't be starting, I'll say that.
I see. And what about what players, first name on the team sheet, who are the players that United fans should be looking out for?
So sort of the main guy that sort of gets everything working is Josh Sheehan in midfield. He's sort of integral to our playing at the minute. He's very good keeping the ball, can find a pass. You know, Deon Charles been scoring. He's been off it for the last few games, but we also just signed Aaron Collins from Bristol Rovers. So, and he got an assist with his second touch at a Bolton shirt yesterday. So,
wow.
I think he should be the one to start, but I think realistically him or Deon are going to cause some problems.
What's your prediction? $1 million question.
I won't lie. I'm still relatively confident.
Fair enough.
I will say 2-1 Bolton.
Okay, fair enough. Yeah, interesting. I do think it's going to be a bit of a game. I don't think it'll be.
Yeah, I don't think we'll like blow you away or anything like that. I think it's definitely a team that we need to respect still.
Interesting to see if that centre half, well, the right back plays at centre half. Targeting.
Bit nervous,
Well, that's what to look out for, you fans. Ben, thank you so much for this and best luck for the rest of the season.
No problem, you too, mate.
Excellent. Thank you very much for that preview, Julian. And this is by magic, you're on my screen again. Right, looking ahead to Tuesday night then. It's the first of a busy midweek schedule for February. We've had a question come in from Callum, who has asked, do we think that Harris only signed three players due to the existing quality in the squad, which just wasn't performing well or in the right system. So didn't feel much was needed except adding a presence up top. Wanted to come to you on that one, Julian, because I've got a feeling that on Tuesday night we might see some of the new lads that joined in the last week of the window get some minutes. So what's your thoughts on Callum's question there?
Yeah, interesting. I mean, I suppose first point to make, he definitely wanted four. So
yeah, he wanted more. He blatantly wanted more. Yeah.
He quite openly wanted more. So I don't really know how that answers your question, but I think he definitely wanted at the top end of the pitch to up the quality rather than what was in the squad. No offense to Gaston and Fajiri, they obviously just aren't available. So you're looking at Njoku and Kaikai playing up there. So definitely wanted to up the quality in the squad in those areas. I think we've said all season that there's a good enough squad here, which was probably why not to, you know, to go back to it, but why Bonner actually probably ended up getting the sack was a big part of that being the existing quality in the squad. And then I think, to be honest, the main answer to that is go back to what we were talking about with Lyle Taylor. I think it's players like that upping the standards and the mentality of the squad, and there's definitely a bit of that grit and determination. Also, with a new manager, you do just get that sort of reset, and everything's gone largely positive since then. So I think the atmosphere in the changing room must be pretty high at the moment. That obviously helps quality players play with a bit of confidence and show their class. So I think the system and the environment's probably working for a lot of these players. It's only one win, so let's not go too overboard. Time will tell. This February is pretty mad, but we have just given ourselves such a lovely buffer to the danger zone that we can go into these games with no fear. I look at Tuesday, and I'm not saying it's free hit because it's not.
But you I'm just free hit.
I'm just saying I'm excited for it because there's no pressure on it. I think there's no need to go there and do something against one of the best sides in the league.
Take a point and move on.
Yeah, exactly.
Kachunga goal to really wind them up.
Yeah, exactly.
Tom, I'm looking at the BBC website and how they've lined Bolton up in their last game. 2 points from me. The first one, the formation is a 3-1-4-2. So that's quite nice. Let's try that one for Cambridge in response to your Christmas tree question. Second question, which is one to answer.
That wasn't a question, mate.
Obviously, they play a back three.
That was just waxing lyrical about a back three again.
They play a back three. Obviously, we've come unstuck against back threes for quite a few of the past few seasons. It's been a case again this season that we've struggled against the back three. Are you looking at the squad now and going, right, well, Taylor's on fire. We've got Bond just come in. We've got Kachunga that can play in that hole. You're more confident that we can cause issues to back threes rather than just having one isolated guy up top to toe the line?
Yeah, I think a big part of the problem in sort of years gone by against the back three has been that we've been pretty rigid in sort of 4-2-3-1, and the one in the hole has always been like a midfielder really, rather than like an attacker. So it left like frequently it'd be like Ironside or Smith, so isolated against three centre backs, and I think that was a big part of the problem because it meant the ball just didn't really stick much at the top end of the pitch. Now obviously, regardless of the formation we set up in, but you imagine it's going to be sort of similar to how it was on Saturday. And the personnel in there means that you've probably got Kachunga and one of Taylor or Bon or, to kind of occupy the defender. So I'd like to think we can kind of pose them a little more, a few more problems, to be honest. But we're obviously a really good side. So, obviously they're naturally, there's a part of the game, which is how can we hurt them? But I think a lot of it's going to be a bit like, let's try and really limit what they can do to us because they've got plenty of players in there that can hurt teams. But yeah, like three at the back has been a bit of a thorn in our side. Let's be honest about that. Interesting how Neil Harris kind of approaches it. Like I said, Bolland couldn't quite, or it didn't seem like he kind of couldn't quite crack it, I feel. And like to think that Harris can maybe a little bit more. It's probably a little bit harsh, like, said Bolland maybe didn't crack that. But it did feel like every time we come up against three at the back, particularly the promotion year, it was like, fucking hell, we've got a real challenge in our hands here.
Promotion year midweek. Yeah, that's the big
thing. Yeah, Tuesday night away game. Yeah, Bolton, for example. But yeah, I'm looking forward to it as well. I think going to the Abbey has been a much better experience this season than it's been for a long time. you know, there's obviously another, I think it's like cheap tickets for students or something. So hopefully there'll be a lot in there. Hopefully it can be a better spectacle than the last time I did that, which I think was for a Grimsby game, which was absolutely horrendous.
I remember it.
Yeah, I remember it well. I think Smith might have missed a penalty that day, maybe. But yeah, I'm looking forward to it. Should be a big atmosphere. You know, they're a big club coming. I don't know exactly how they're going to travel. I imagine I'll bring a few hundred at least. And yeah, I think if we come out of this game with anything, you know, obviously you'd like to think we can use the momentum well and obviously build on the platform that we built for ourselves in the last few games.
Have to mention that Neil Harris said that in his press conference.
I was waiting to bring it in. I was wondering when it was going to come up, to be honest. Oh, amazing. Obviously a listener. He's obviously done the back catalogue since you guys spoke on Monday.
should we play it?
Classic, yes. Chop.
Score so quickly, and I was imperative, and it gave us that platform to build on.
It is really concerning how much of an influence that sentence is starting to have in varying walks of life. yeah, you know, what
can we say?
It's the same with like on the grass. I'm starting to notice that being said elsewhere in life outside of football. So I'll give you an example. A couple of days ago, Sinead was, you know, had Murray, had baby Wes for the day. And she texts me saying, oh, you know, Murray's having a great day. He's out on the grass. And I just went straight into win next game
just
mentality.
Doing his drills on the grass.
The really frustrating thing is, like, the really annoying thing is, like, these are sentences, right, that we kind of look at in our niche little world of following a lower league football team. And when people, like, say them in, like, normal life, like at work or something, and you go, oh, yeah. Like, they look at you really blankly.
It's
really, really strange.
Yeah, can I just mention something as well that sort of feeds into Tuesday, but something
Please
that
do.
You guys mentioned
Please
at
do,
the
man.
Start as well about Saturday. Obviously, us getting 3 points is the most important thing every week, but it is worth noting how perfectly every single other result in the league fell for us. Like, you literally couldn't have... I think Reading were the only team to take a
They
point.
Got drawn, didn't they, at Oxford?
Yeah. Well, obviously, Fleetwood won, but they beat Vale, so they drag Vale right back into it, and you probably consider us so far beyond Fleetwood that they're not going to catch us anyway. So that everything sort of went perfectly for us, really. So it was a huge day for us, I think. I think you look back at it, Bonner mentioned in one of the, not the top 20 ones, that in the first year up, there was a spell just after Newcastle where we beat Lincoln, Doncaster and Crewe back to back. And those 9 points, he said, like, essentially kept us up because you get them all in one chunk. And I think considering the opposition we've played in this run and, you know, the fact that we stopped them picking up a lot of points points against us, really, it's massive. I think this run could be the one that we look back on and go, well, that was really what changed the season for us.
Yeah, we said it, didn't we? I think maybe after Orient maybe after the Stevenage debacle, the kind of 8 week period that started right at the beginning of January and sort of ends, you know, sort of end of February, heading into March. That's kind of the season there. And I think more so probably these four games than any other part of that. Cause, you know, you're always kind of, you know, you're dropping in a Bolton here and a Posh there. Whereas like these four games have been proper, like against teams in and around us who you expect to be down there. And, you know what, we were probably a little bit too focused on the three, which was Fleetwood, Exeter and Burton, and probably not counting Shrewsbury into that enough. And we were like, would you take five from those three? We're like, yeah, definitely. But if you'd asked if I'd taken eight from those four, 100%, really
absolutely
happy.
You would just expect that the two wins would come at home, right? So that's the only thing.
Yeah.
The way it's gone is slightly different, but it doesn't really matter. Points.
I mean, we've not won away since August. So yeah, naturally,
yeah,
expecting those 3 points away. Do you think we'll get anything on Tuesday?
I actually do.
Julian.
I felt this way. I think we said it on the pod last week, or maybe I said it on Thursday. I can't remember. Too many pods at the moment. I've been feeling pretty confident about this one. I don't know why. Like, I mean, we're one of the best form teams in the league at home. I think we're like top eight or something in our home form. Mm-hmm. I just got a feeling we'll be right up for it, especially after Saturday. Momentum with us. Obviously, we've got good quality inside now. I think we'll get a point out of it. I think it'll be a 1-1 draw.
Love that. Kachinga goal?
No, I'm going to go with Taylor again. He's an absolute bagsman.
What about you, Tom?
Yeah, I think we get something out of it. I have a sneaky feeling that I might be about to witness my third 0-0 draw in a row. In the flesh, that is. I could see that. I think, yeah, like I mentioned a moment ago, I just kind of feel like there's going to be a lot of emphasis on containing Bolton. which is fair enough. You know, obviously third in the league, flying high, doing well, potentially get promoted this year. And yeah, I could see that turn into a real stalemate, which would be great.
I'm going for a defeat to bring it down.
Oh, nice.
A goal coming from a Jack Iredale long throw. That's my prediction.
Is he starting for them? Does he play regularly for them?
He played on Saturday. Okay. He started on Saturday.
Good for him.
How many Jack Iredale long throws did we see? Actually, Jack Iredale's weren't too bad. It was George Williams' ones. They were absolutely, like, I must have sat through and watched about 200 of them and none of them had any impact. I just remember you going, why are you doing it? Like, they're not flat. They're not like hard to defend against. They just sort of loop in and always headed away by some 6'4" beast at the back.
It's always the MK Dons game where George Williams was doing it all game and we did nothing. And then they tried it once and scored. That I'll always remember.
Why is it always us?
Danny Andrews got a bit of a long throw. We've not talked about Danny Andrews.
He has got a good long throw.
I'm glad you brought him up, Joel, because he's obviously another one who's, this is going back to the Shrewsbury game in a little bit, to be honest, over the run of form we've been on in the last few weeks. He's been absolutely panned, like left, right and centre, particularly in the sort of first part of the season. And I think he's been excellent. I think he's been one of our best performers in the last few weeks. And I just think it kind of needs mentioning because it feels like another one of them where certain players get praised heavily, heavily, heavily and, you know, never kind of picked up. But Andrew's one that's just taken a lot of stick. And I think he's quietly having actually quite a decent season. And particularly of late. So just worth a mench, I reckon.
Well, he's another one that you mentioned earlier about sort of watching a game on iFollow and seeing opposing teams' commentators and getting an insight. He's another one that quite often gets mentioned in that experience bracket. Like Morrison and Bennett are like the ones that I always think of, but actually he's like same age as Ryan Bennett, I think. Someone fact check that because I am really bad at getting players' ages, but I know they're both in their 30s.
Yeah, 33. You're right, yeah.
30s, so.
Good age.
You know what? That's another thing that the Shrewsbury COCOM had. It was like, just couldn't quite get over. They're so experienced. Defenders are so experienced. Like, yeah. yeah, they're in their 30s, mate. Get over it.
Brilliant. Well, what a great day Saturday was, and hopefully Tuesday brings more results. Lads, I've really enjoyed this. Thanks for having me. Good seeing you, Julian.
Yeah, pleasure, mate. See you soon.
Tom, look forward to Free at the Back on Tuesday.
Yeah, you more than me, I think, mate.
Stop pushing it.